Welcome to Salam Nerds Podcast. We do reviews and recaps of nerd culture, reality TV, and current events from this week.
Yo, 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 it's Salam Nerds. My name is Dean, a.k.a. Watson, and I'm here my boy, Chad.
We drop live episodes on YouTube on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. All episodes can also be found everywhere podcasts are found. Thank you to all our supporters. Please help us by subscribing and leaving a good review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Yo, 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 Salam Nerds. It's your boy Neebs, a.k.a. Watch with Neebs, and I'm here with my co-host Jeff, a.k.a. DJ Dignity.
Nice.
Listen, we got an amazing guest for you guys today. I am so excited. Also, before we start, it's the last day of Ramadan, so Eid Mubarak to everybody celebrating. We got a little
Eid Mubarak, yeah.
I may be opening my fast right live on the air and it'll be officially Eid. But today, you know how people have like the Mount Rushmore of people that you can interview?
Yeah.
I slid into the DMs of one of my Mount Rushmores, and we got him for the podcast. And he said that he almost never does podcasts, especially ones that, you know, are about diversity. But he made an exception for us. He made an exception for this character because he loves this character so much. And I love the fact that he loves this character as much as we love him. So I'm really, really excited to have him on our show. Our guest today, you might know him from iZombie. He's also in Supergirl. He was Scarecrow in the Harley Quinn. But you'll mostly know him from the many amazing Mike Flanagan horror shows, including my favorite, Midnight Mass. Welcome to the show, Rahul Kohli.
Hey, salam. How are you, everyone?
Good, good. Hey. Thank you so much for doing this, man. We really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Eid Mubarak.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
Listen,
I forgot. I've got a sip of coffee here, and you guys haven't broken your fast yet, right?
It's okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. I'm going to sip off camera, or I don't know.
No.
Please do what you got to do. All right. Like, it's like, what, an hour left, and I'm completely good right now. So, doesn't even bother me.
People always say that, like, you know, oh, I'll be, respectful and do this off camera, which is super nice, and we love it. But to see people eat is actually part of the struggle. Part of the struggle, right? Because like we need to know how the unfortunate and the underprivileged feel. So it's part of the process. So we never ever take offense to it. No Muslim ever takes offense to you eating.
Also, I have a very close relationship. I have two of my brothers basically are Muslim, and we went to school together. You know, they did it at school as kids. You know, everyone had lunch breaks. Everyone's eating their packed lunch. But we used to do this thing with them, which was kind of cool. There was a time where back in the UK we were breaking, they would break fast at around, I'd say 3:30, quarter to four in the afternoon, short days. And at the end of school, we'd always like go over to like a little news agents or a little shopping area, like a, you know, candy shop or whatever, buy everything, super hungry since lunch, you know, chips, chocolates or whatever. And then we wouldn't really eat it until they broke their fast. We just wait as a group. And it was like a multi-ethnic cultural group.
Yeah.
Waiting by the clock tower. We're like, all right, cool, let's do it. So we would break fast with them, even though we didn't necessarily have to. But
that's cool. I love the solidarity, man. That's awesome.
Not to get too intense at the beginning, but the people we went to school with in the area that we grew up in, they didn't care whether or not I was Hindu or an atheist or Muslim or whatever they were. We all got it together. We were all together anyway, right? So
absolutely. I always say this to our Sikh brothers and sisters. I was like, I'm so sorry. You guys get it so bad because of us.
Yeah, right? Turban.
But they never throw us under the bus. I love that community. They're so wonderful. Yeah. But
it's the same, there is more solidarity. But
yeah, exactly. Together, we're stronger together for sure. I love that. But listen, you go viral every year on my account. Like, it basically during Ramadan, I like
it's
to.
So weird.
because like I don't always talk about like Muslim representation and stuff like that, but I do for Ramadan, and this year especially because of all the stuff that's happening in the Middle East, I wanted to make a point to do that. And again, every year midnight mass is my go-to. It's the gold standard for representation. And I posted this so many times where I'm like, I kind of stopped tagging you because I'm like, this guy kind of thinks I'm stalking him. But it always goes viral and somebody ends up tagging you anyway. Somebody is like, I love this actor so much. He's amazing. He's underrated. He's underutilized. He needs to be in everything, which I 100% agree. I definitely do agree with that. And, you know, things are changing. I feel like this year we got with the Polite Society and Miss Marvel. So there's a little bit more of female representation going, but a lot for men, we don't have a lot of like these non-toxic Muslim heroes that are the archetypes that like you play. And I really, really love that. I love the roles that you choose. They're so good.
And, like, oh, thank you, man.
It's definitely most people won't do that. They'll take whatever, but you take amazing roles. Talk about that if you can.
I don't know where to start. So firstly, thank you. Yeah. Look, Midnight Mass. You're not supposed to have favorite children, but Midnight Mass is one of my favorites. And for many reasons. One, it was probably the most challenging role for me at the time. Pre-iZombie, which was my big break, I did mostly drama. I wasn't really known as like a comedic actor or anything. It wasn't my forte. I know I have a tendency to lean funny just as a person and say controversial things and muck around, but I've never seen myself as a comedic actor. And then when iZombie happened, that was it. I think people thought that was my vibe, was like, oh, he does comedies. He doesn't take himself too seriously. Go on his social media. Look, it's all the same thing. And then Bly Manor was this transition role, because I auditioned for it and it did require a level of that comedic energy that I had from iZombie, but it was still more dramatic. And in that one job, I was offered Midnight Mass by Mike. He had seen what he wanted to see for the sheriff. But the sheriff, once that Midnight Mass went out, my auditions changed. Comedies sort of died down, and then I started getting the guy, man, the lead. Didn't book any of them, but it started something. So Midnight Mass means a lot to me, because it definitely kind of made people feel like I was more serious about my craft, even though I always was. I learned to be funny for iZombie. I wasn't the funny man. And the other thing is like, there was that. It changed how my industry perceived me. It gave me my fans that were in peers, not like followers on Instagram, but like I had Hideo Kojima reach out. I had Hayden Christensen come up to me over the sheriff. Yeah, and it put me, Pedro Pascal, a lot of people, something about that. I always had support from the audience, but I never really had peer recognition, and that's what Midnight Mass gave me. The other reason is, and this is a long answer, but the other reason Midnight Mass is special to me is that was one of the first shows to do during COVID. It was a big struggle. It was a big effort from everyone. I was playing, it's no secret, I know that there were a few people that weren't super happy with my casting in Midnight Mass, but I'm a Hindu Punjabi, an atheist, I'm not Muslim. I'm also, at the time I was 34, the sheriff was about 41, 42, we placed him. He had a teenage son. I'm a 34-year-old idiot. So it was so much for me to as close as I am to my boys who are Muslim and Islam and the culture and things like that, I'm still a pretender. So the research and everything I had to do, I had to learn from scratch.
I was saying, I don't have a problem with non-Muslim actors playing Muslim characters, especially if the work is being done right. Like, because when it's not done right, then it's a problem. But when it's done right, it's fine, because Muslim is a faith. It's not what you look like, right? You're not having a white guy play a brown guy, right? Anybody can be Muslim. And the fact that if you have the writing and you have like consultation done that's Muslim, then the actor doesn't necessarily need to be Muslim. It's when you don't have these things, you need a Muslim actor, because a Muslim actor can tell you, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this. This is probably not the right way to do it. But I think you guys did a great job. I think you guys had people come on, I believe, and help you and consult with you. So could you talk about that a little bit? Like, who helped you in understanding how, you know, Muslims pray and how what Muslims believe in? And even the whole 9/11 stuff, I feel like is so like true to us, especially me who lives in New York City, who's seen this happen.
Yeah. I represent certain things that are like, at a time I was Hindu, I was brought up a Hindu, I was Punjabi, right? I'm British as well at the same time. When it's your own thing, I'm not pointing fingers, I'm just saying this is how I feel about my stuff. Because I am that thing, I can be slightly more lazy about it, because, and I can also take liberty. So like, I've had things happen in Brit where I'm playing British and they're like, trash can, and sometimes I might not fight it because I am British and go, oh, don't worry about it, we say it like that, I'll say trash instead of bit rubbish.
Yeah.
It's because I am the thing, I am the authority, you can't question me because I can go, well, I did it, I can be lazier. When you're a guest in someone else's house, I think there's this added pressure.
Wow.
I was a guest in someone else's home and that stressed me out, and I didn't want to cut any corners. Wanted to make sure, like, do you know what I mean? So that's what, yeah. I think that was the energy I came in. I was like, if you take this, you're a guest. Take off your shoes. When it's your own house, you sometimes you're like, you know what I mean? It's your own house. But when it's someone else's, man, it's like you're trying to be that perfect guest. So what happened was, when Mike offered me the role, he kind of gave me this pitch, and we were still filming Bly Manor, and it was around November, and we were going to start filming initially in March. And I immediately kind of called up my best friend and my friends who I spoke to you about earlier, the guys I broke the fast with, Mohammed Bouissa. And I talked to him about it over the phone, about the role. And we just started to talk about the religion in a more sort of detailed way, in a way that I don't think we'd spoken to each other about it before. And that was our relationship. And then, yeah, I remember having a conversation with him about like, what do you want to see from this? Like, what do you want to see? And he was like, be the guy, be the hero. We want that. Make it clean.
Yeah.
Don't second guess yourself. You know, like a lot of the Muslim characters, I think in shows that the trend is that they're fighting their own religion.
Yeah.
They're fighting. Yes. How do I coexist? How do I have this oppressive religion and this free West kind of nonsense that they do in a lot of these things.
You're right. Money.
Yeah. And Bo's like, you know, and I think, and Mike, again, Mike gets a lot of credit. And I know it's a subject that gets a lot of people nervous to navigate. Yes, Mike's a straight white dude. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, he wrote a lot of it. There wasn't much tinkering to the script.
Interesting.
That would be my second question. I wanted to know, like, how much of it was on the page and how much was it you?
Look, we prop up. I think we're all very comfortable, more comfortable talking about me playing the character, our consultants, Mohammed Haji and Mohammed Bouissa, being our consultants. But like, it was on the page.
Yeah.
And Mike's not the type of person to run around and be like, well, hold on. The consultants didn't write the scenes. I did the writing. Like, I created the character. Rahul didn't change anything. Rahul just became a character. Like, I became his character.
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, and because Mike's a very humble guy, he doesn't center himself with those conversations about Sheriff Hassan. But a lot of it is Mike. A lot of it was Mike's research. A lot of it is Mike's understanding. But there were a few things that came from conversations with me and Bo, and it was this, you know, we never question the religion. There's no world in which Sheriff Hassan ever goes, maybe I picked the wrong team. Nah.
Yeah.
No. There's convictions in his belief. There's dignity, obviously, in how he conducts himself. Mike was very specific about, like, how he handles microaggressions. Mm-hmm. And they're very similar to how my best friend, Bo, how he handled microaggressions. And this was a dude that could beat anyone up. Bo's a very strong, strong man. And I've never seen anyone get under his skin. He's always cool with it. All right, cool. I don't want to challenge it. You know, he himself as a devout Muslim. You know, he grew up in a rough part of London with us, and we were subject to a lot of racism. We were there obviously post 9/11 when Islam became the enemy of the West, and you know, every Muslim person was vilified, and yeah, I'd never seen him lose it. So he was a lot of my Sheriff Hassan. He's kind of thought about Bo a lot while I was on set, you know. What was the question? How did they? So yeah, but then so what happened was I was having these conversations with Bo privately, and I was talking to Mike on the phone about something while we're still doing Blind Man, and I was like, yeah, I'm just talking to, I've been chatting to my mate Bo, and he was like, can I talk to him? I got very nervous because this is my childhood friend, this is my guy, like this is literally my brother, this, you know, and I was like, uh-oh, I don't know if I want my two worlds crossing over.
World collide.
This could be disastrous. I've not seen Bo in a professional capacity. I know him as my mate, but I did anyway. I put those two in touch. And then Mike literally is like, hey, here's the scripts for all seven episodes, and sign an NDA. And if there's anything you see and you want to flag it, flag it and let me know. And that's what they did. And I watched them. I was CC'd on the emails, and there were things where Bo was like, I'd be better if this happened. There were some really good conversations that came out of it. One of the best ones that came out of it was a lot of the classroom stuff came from Bo and Mike talking.
Oh yeah, they're so interesting. Good.
That was different on the page. And Bo and Mike, Bo wrote his notes on that scene, and then Mike rewrote the scene and sent it back, and Bo was like, perfect, that's the one. And then that was the scene. That's how that worked. The other one was, and I love this, so Bo was saying, and again, I'm taking my time here, but Bo, I was so proud of him for this. So he was saying, like, yeah, because I lead the prayer. So whenever we see Sheriff Hassan, I'm on the left.
Yeah.
And it was Bo that was like, but when he shot, have Ali be on the left. And have
him.
That's such a small change, but that's so significant.
I didn't even catch that. Wow.
And because I'm injured, right? And Lord Sir Sheriff Hassan's injured. And it's also a moment of now you're the man.
Yeah.
And that was Bo. That was a little Bo note of when we were like.
You just made me goosebumps. I didn't even know that.
But
that was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my high. That's again what you talk. We're talking about Midnight Mass. Like, you shouldn't have a favorite child, but like little things like that. How can I not, man? Like, these two kids who went to school together, who experienced racism together, who, you know, we were searched and stopped at the airport when we were just going to Morocco as 18-year-olds for like, and interrogated. Really weird stuff. Put in this weird room. These two kids who went through that end up being like doing this thing on Netflix, and I don't know, like, and he, you know, Bo was paid and he was credited as an official good consultant, and yeah, and I would always send him like little clippings of anyone who called said that this was the best representation for Islam or Muslims in the West. I would send it straight to him because I'd be like, I wanted him, even though he's too humble, he's not like he's really over celebrated it, but I wanted him to know like what he did and his impact, and like what how must that feel as a Muslim to have that kind of contribution when people of your own community are saying like, yo, this is it, and you were the guy that helped guide that to a certain degree. And yeah, and like again, in a weird way, me and Mike, I think we both, as guests, we back out. We're just like, yeah, cool, yeah, consultants, yeah. Like we're more than happy to sort of like back out of any of that. But man, yeah, like dude, we were at Nando's in the UK in my area. I went home for the, cheeky Nando's. Mm-hmm. And this is like literally right near my house. So this is like, and I never like all my work and my life, it doesn't follow me home. When I go home, it's like it's dead. It doesn't exist. And so anyway, we'll make our order and Bo goes and gets a fountain drink or whatever he's off. While I'm sitting at the table, these two young 16, 17-year-old kids come up to my table and they're like very polite, standing there sheepishly. I look up, I'm like, hey, what's up? They're like, hi, you're Royal Coley. And I said, yeah. And they were like, man, we're the biggest fans of Midnight Mass. We're both Muslim. And it was two South Asian kids wanting to come over just to express how much Midnight Mass meant to them. And it was like, it was the best fan interaction ever because it was happening 10 minutes from my house. It was who we were, 16, 17-year-olds, right? Mm. And when Bo came over, he didn't know what was going on. I embarrassed him, but I was like, this is the guy that consulted. This was the guy that I based my character on, like when I was working on it. And they took selfies with him. And I just thought it was like the coolest thing ever. But yeah, that's how that all went about.
That's so cool. If you ever, like, I have my comment section and it's filled with people saying, I never knew this. I'm interested in learning about Islam. Like, mm-hmm. I want to, like, all of these amazing comments that I have. It's really, really good. I wish I could share them with them because they're amazing. And
I'll forward them the TikTok.
Yeah, forward them. It's just amazing. I love it.
We had a second, I keep talking about one consultant, but that Bo wasn't on set with us because he lived in the UK.
Yeah.
We had Mohammed Hajim, who was a wonderful person who was there for the practical. He was there with me every day on set. He was there on Zoom whenever I needed him. He was there to teach me Salat and he was there for everything, pronunciation. And without him, again, like what Bo did was all theory, but what Muhammad did on the day was practical and was invaluable to us. So it was really a two-man job.
That's cool. Yeah. I really love we talked a little bit about the scene when they're praying at the end. Was that always in the script? Because there is so many nuances and significance to that I don't think people even know how like amazing that scene is. Because in Islam, if you die in prayer, it means you're resurrected in prayer. And it gives you, it's an auspicious thing. It's a mercy from God to let you be to let you die in prayer because you are very likely to go to heaven and be reunited with your loved ones. And we also know how much Sheriff Hassan loves his wife. So the fact that he got to have that death and be reunited with his wife in heaven is a beautiful, beautiful scene. And the other thing that I noticed is that he died before his son, which is also a mercy because it's the biggest mercy for a father to not have to see their child die. And I just love that scene. It's so wonderful. It's so well done. And I just wanted to know like how much of that was like always meant to be there.
Everything. That was one of the like moments I remember at the table read, you know, with the cast, that it was written so beautifully on the page, and it was an emotional beat for many reasons. I don't know if like everyone on the cast understood the significance of how much of an honor it is for the sheriff to pass away during prayer. Like it's to me, it's like for a character like that, like I always saw him as like my kind of superhero dude who like punches vampires in the face. If you break it down, that's who he is, right? He's the sheriff who was the only one who like beat up vampires with his bare fists and whatever. So like, and for him to die in prayer, it's like the highest honor a character could get. Like, and then to be reunited with white, like he had the best arc to a certain degree.
Oh yeah.
For a hero, he had the hero's arc, which I loved. And yeah, no, everything was pretty much on the page. I think the only thing I remember that changed, obviously Bo had we had the switch around to make sure for the kind of symbolism of Ali leading prayer for the first time in that show. And I think the only thing that was changed, sorry, it's my dog. The only thing that changed was the scene was described as you're seeing them both bow out of frame together, mm-hmm. and rise up, and you get used to the rhythm, but then only Ali rises.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while before it reveals that the sheriff didn't.
Ah.
So I think on the page, it was written in a more poetic way. And then I can't remember why. I think Flanagan, when we shot it, because I didn't think that the Hassan's death was going to be shown, but I think I fell in a way that he actually liked.
Yeah.
That didn't look too clunky. And I think he ended up, I don't know why he decided not to. Maybe it wasn't obvious enough. He needed to see it. So that was the only thing that changed was visually how you saw the sheriff pass away, but everything else was the same.
Wow, that's cool.
That's beautiful, man. I've got a question then. Like, were there any scenes you struggled with during shooting Midnight Mass?
All of them.
Okay.
Dude, I'd never done an American accent before. I've got a very thick British accent. And I mean, I was more scared about the American accent than I was the prayer. I was like, they can save me in prayer. Like, someone else can dub technically if I really mess up. But I didn't have a dialect coach, unfortunately, on set. So it was acting on the hardest difficult. It was like, for me, it was like the Dark Souls of characters. It couldn't have been any more difficult and isolating. And something on top of something. And it all started wrong. It all started with me not with going, like, I'm 34. How am I supposed to be? Oh, thank you very much. Saw the comment there. For me, it started with me fundamentally being afraid of, well, is anyone going to believe I'm this age, that I could have a son of this age? At the time, my beard was completely black. I had no gray, so I was being aged out. I'm not American. I am not Muslim. So there was a lot of like, oh my God, I'm not going to pull this off. This isn't going to work. So I was terrified in every scene. I think the most difficult scene for me was the monologue.
Yeah.
Okay.
The 9/11 monologue. But not because of the monologue itself, in terms of like how to break it down and how to perform it. For me, it was more logistics. Unfortunately, these stories have never been shared, by the way. I'm mm-hmm. sure it's fine, but Mike got a cold, just a cold, on the week of that scene. And because of COVID at that time, and it was pre-vaccine, he wasn't allowed on set. So one of the big scenes that he missed was mine, the monologue, the one big Sheriff Hassan scene. And Mike was isolated to a van that had to be off the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was remotely talking to me through a walkie-talkie. So I lost my guy. I lost my safety net, which is Mike being there. This is fine. I have four-page monologue, no dialect coach. I had a dialect coach on Zoom a couple of nights before, but not with me on the day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We weren't going to cut it into bits, so I had to do it all in one take, because there was a chance that Mike was like, I may stay on you the whole time, I might not cut away, so we're gonna shoot this in one, so you can't mess up,
no pressure.
And so it was a lot was going on, and it happened to be the day that Bly Manor was coming out.
Yeah,
so my monologue 9/11 day was me alone. Like not looking at my phone, because Blind Manor had just come out. I was, and I was stressed. I was very angry, very frustrated with myself for not being more prepared or wanting to be more prepared. And so I struggled that day. And then and then randomly, when the scene was finished, I broke a tooth, which was, I was mucking around with the AD, Morgan, our assistant director, and I popped a Skittle in my mouth that was in Sheriff Hassan's, the convenience store.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to eat the food in the store because it's prop food, but it's real.
Right, yeah.
And it's closer to, it was closer to us than Craft Services was, because of COVID, Craft Services was like a mile away. And I was like, it's my flanelog day. I'll do what I want. and Morgan's like, don't steal the... And Morgan was the one who didn't want anyone stealing it. I took Skittles in front of him. I was like, what are you going to do, bruv? And I popped one in, and it was like a pebble because it'd been outdoors. Because it's not a real shop. It's just a set. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I cracked a tooth, and I... And I pulled out like a broken tooth.
No.
That was the same day as the monologue day. Then I drove home and I was like, when I go home, and I was like, I was keeping fit. So I wasn't like eating any garbage except that Skittle. But I was like, I got a can of Coke. Oh, and I didn't want to drink alcohol while I was playing the sheriff. That was the other thing. So there was no
whiskey.
I got to like the final day. Our rap party was one day before I rapped. So I had my first Guinness that day. So technically, I one day I was still playing the sheriff. I had a Guinness, but that wasn't the thing. But anyway, I went home and I ran over a raccoon. So that was
wow.
a giant raccoon ran out in front of my car as I drove home from the monologue, just as I was coming down from all the nerves of performing it. And then it just like face on, and it just like it shook the car. And I was like shaking.
Oh, dear God.
I was just like, what a day.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
why I was thinking of the, I was what thinking of a day. Day. It's like, that was intense.
Someone says, not holy Rocket shit. Raccoon. What a day.
I mean, it was as big as Rocket, for sure.
Oh, my God. Oh my that's God. So funny. Yeah. That is.
I know we're laughing about it. That must have been like terrible for you in the day. But
you know what? It's funny, man. Like, I hated, and I've been very comfortable. Like, I'm very close to Mike, and. And this is Mike will tell everyone, you know, people, I think a lot of people debate, go back and forth about what Mike's favorite, like what's his best work. I think consensus is most people would say Hill House. Sure. Mike, without question, is Midnight Mass. That's Mike's favorite show. It's his favorite experience. It's his passion project. He adores it. I cannot tell you how fortunate I am, how grateful I am to have played that role. I don't think it would have been mine if I had auditioned. I would not have been found by Mike. I don't think I would have been on his list. I'm way too young. There's a million reasons why I wouldn't have got it, but I got it because of Blind Manor. I got it because there was something about me that he was like, this guy. It means the world to me, but it was the hardest thing I've had to do. It was the worst I've ever felt as an actor. It's the most insecure. I really didn't enjoy doing it. But when it was over, it was the most rewarding experience. I felt like I came out a better actor. I felt closer to Mike and trust him more. And I was like, he's got me. He does get me. Like, as soon as I saw the final cut, I was like, he did everything he said he would. He said it. We got you. It's great. Don't worry about it. I've got you. And ever since Midnight Mass, I'm like, I swore a blood oath. I'm like, I will be in everything that Mike makes, no matter what. Like, I don't know where I am. I will always be there for him. Like, he was there for me and gave me this character, a character that, again, going back to Islam, a character that a community that we really, really wanted to do right by. If everyone had just not said anything and just went, mm-hmm. that would have been a win for us, right? Yeah. You know, Irish dude Mike Flanagan, like, atheist Indian boy Raul Coley. If everyone had just gone, all right, cool, fine, and there was no backlash, we'd have been like, we did it.
Yeah.
But for it to go the other way where people are like, no. Look at this. This is what we want more of, was just like, I've never experienced any, I've never done work that's felt important like that. You know, I'm still don't get too hung up on representation. Like you mentioned earlier, I don't do podcasts about diversity. I don't want to talk about it. I have reasons for that. For me, I try to keep things as light and fluffy as possible, and it's entertainment and it's jokes and it's action. And I just want to make the audience laugh and jump and cry. And it's not that serious, bro, that kind of attitude. I don't want to be like other actors and self-inflate. But I can't ignore how the community felt about Sheriff Hassan, and then how, in turn, that made us go, wow, this is bigger than us. It's yeah.
That makes me really happy to know that even Mike Flanagan knows that how much it means to us. Because I think he had a show called Midnight Club. And yeah. I stood in line for 3 hours just to ask him a question. And I wasn't going to ask him a question. I just wanted to thank him. That's all I wanted to do. And it got to the person right in front of me, and they cut it off.
And I was so sad.
No.
And all I wanted to do was thank him. And if you ever talk to him, just let him know how much. I'm sure after talking to you, I'm sure he knows. But, man, I stood in line for 3 hours just to thank him. That's how much this character means to me.
I will let him know. That means a lot to him. There are so many things about Midnight Mass and moving components, and the sheriff isn't the biggest one. Obviously, the story is not about this NYPD Muslim guy. Right. Yeah. That's a C D E storyline, you know. But he very much. I know for a fact he has been approached multiple times. And again, Mike's one of those dudes. He immediately passes over the praise, and anyone who brings it up to him, to our consultants, to the people that he spoke to the interviews. You know, you mentioned the 9/11 monologue relating to it being from New York. That's a real story that Mike, you know, when I said yes to the role, he forwarded me the articles that he had read and interviews and was like, watch these. That was from him.
Yeah.
And his own research. But again, so he doesn't take much of the credit, but like, again, I can talk about it. And I'm sure little Rahul, who played Ali, my son, he'll tell you the same thing. Flanagan's responsible for like all of it. You know, it was just that he knew he had the right people around him just to make sure that it was everything was accurate and everything was good. But there was nothing problematic in there. There wasn't a scene where the sheriff sat there and went, man, I don't know if I want to be a Muslim. Like no one had to go, Mike, you can't do it. There was nothing in there like that. It was already good to go. It was just elevated by the consultants and tweaked slightly.
And it wasn't like a tokenized version of it too, because the character has so much depth to them. Because I remember one of my favorite scenes, it's probably one that people don't talk about, is when Ali wants to go to communion and he goes like, you know, I will never tell my son not to look for God, but we already have him. Mm-hmm. That is such a powerful line. Like, it gives me chills. And the fact that, like, you know, this guy wasn't even Muslim. He converted, and it was so important to him and to his wife who passed away that his son stay Muslim, and that he was able to, like, he never wants to prevent him from seeking knowledge and seeking God, but he also knew how important it was for him to stay Muslim. Like, that's not a character people write often. Like, I know you said like a CD line, but that's a character for the books, man. That is a very well written character.
Yeah, I agree with you. Again, it's Mike. Yeah. It's Mike. I mean, like, I he's a wonderful writer, and he surrounds himself with wonderful writers too. And there wasn't, again, I don't really know what to say other than like, I had the easiest job to in a certain degree, man. I didn't create anything. I brought the stupidest things to Sheriff Hassan. You know, Mike had this beautiful tragic character, and the boys, both Mohammeds, brought the kind of accuracy of the portrayal and making sure everything was authentic. And then I just came along and was like, oh yeah, look, I really like Clint Eastwood. Can we like make him look more like cowboy-y? So I'm not really one to like, I can't take any of the praise really, because he wrote just a beautiful character. And I remember Kate saying something to me, Kate Siegel, when she was like, I couldn't see the sheriff's arc properly. Like, I wasn't seeing it in the right way. And she was like, you realize what happened, right? She was like, you see who's standing at the end and who saves the island. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, well, everyone thinks when they watch the show that it's about Riley, but then it's not. And everyone thinks that then it's about, oh, it's about Father Paul. But actually,
it's not.
The people that it ends up being is, it's the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Muslim sheriff and the scientist. And they're the ones that managed to fell the beast and you know, save the rest of the world. So in the bigger scale, they don't save the island, they save the world because they contain it and stop it from spreading. And the people that are directly responsible for that is Hassan, is Annabeth Gish's character, and Kate Siegel's character, Erin. And I didn't see that. I don't know why I never saw that. I was like, oh, you're right. Yeah, they are the heroes of the piece, and they put their lives on the line to save the bigger picture. I just never saw the bigger picture. But yeah, man, it's all Mike.
I love that. I love the fact that, you know, when it comes from a Christian standpoint, there was like a return to goodness at the end when they're all singing and they're all like sacrificing themselves. I think everybody got just a wonderful arc, and I really, really love that. But I think you shouldn't sell yourself short. I think you did bring a level of gravitas to the role and the way you acted. I don't sell yourself short, because there's a lot of people who could not have done what you have done. A lot of people could have ended up looking very silly trying to do that, and you pulled it off. Like, just fantastic the way you did it.
Oh, you shared. Thank you. No, I love the sheriff, and it's the hottest I've ever felt as an actor too.
Honestly, I felt hot too. I was just like, brown guy I can relate to that kind of looks like me. I felt like I was feeling hot.
Well, I always think of stuff like that, man, because I'm like, yo, I can't wait for the brown boys to have another character that they
I'm
can,
waiting
like,
for more hair
out.
To grow get gray so I can look even more like you.
Yeah. Well, bro, we were putting that, well, that was all fake on the what's that?
I don't know if you can see this, but I had a friend text me like right before this. And it says, how does he always look like a hot lumberjack?
But also, you know, I can't spell, because I just realized I spelled my own name wrong. Can you see that?
Oh, I saw that, yeah. I wasn't going to say anything.
So it's not all about being hot. You got to spell it too. I love Sheriff Hassan more than most characters. And there was something about, you know, I was on this island, and we were in a bubble during filming.
Yeah, of course.
The world was a very scary place at the time. There was no vaccine. We were in deep, 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 deep lockdown. But we're going to make this show about an isolated community. And I was, aside from Louis Moffat, who played one of the altar boys, I was the only Brit cosplaying as an American. Cosplaying as a Muslim. I was terrified all the time, but like, and I didn't really talk to anyone. I just had my music playlist in and my script, and I just stayed right there in complete fear for when they would be like, okay, cool, Mike's ready for you now. But there's this, I romanticize it now. I look back at it and I forget all the things I didn't let in at the time, which was like, everyone used to dote on the costume and be like, Sheriff Daddy's on set. And it was super sweet. And everyone, like, I never realized it at the time, just how everyone was treating me. I was too busy just like locked in. And I remember every morning, I've not had that in a long time, man, where I enjoyed getting into costume. I enjoyed my process of, I'd pull up, we had to self-drive. I'd be blasting my Ennio Morricone playlist, which was like, you know, The Fistful of Dollars, The Bad, The Ugly. I always kept that. That was Sheriff Hassan's playlist. It was all Western movies.
That's so funny.
Yeah, well, it all stemmed from the only contribution I had that was a Rahul-ism, I guess, what wasn't what Mike wanted, wasn't what the Muhammad said to do, was I'm a fan of cinema and I love Westerns. And when when Mike first sort of told me about Midnight Mass and the character he wanted me to play, I was like, oh, dope. How smart, how cool. You've fused the hero and the villain of cinema together, because you've got America's great romanticized hero of cinema, the small town sheriff, the white boy, right? But you've also taken America's modern greatest villain, the brown bearded Muslim.
Wow.
And you fused them into one. And I was like, that's dope. And I don't want to, we've got the brown part down, but I don't want to ignore the sheriff part, because I want the audiences to still feel like I've seen this character type before.
Yeah.
Right? So, and Mike was like, run with it. If that's what you're inspired, run with it, go for it. Because Mike's a supporter. And And that's when Mike found out, like, oh no, that he ripped a bandaid. He Mike didn't realize he had just cast like a massive Clint Eastwood Man with No Name fan as a sheriff. And I immediately was hitting him up, like, oh, like when we had meetings with like costume designer Terry Anderson, I was like, how do we get the silhouette of the West? I don't want it to look weird. Like, I can't just rock up in a cowboy outfit in front of the show, but how do we fake it? How do we sort of do it? So you look at it and you're like,
Modernize it.
Yeah. So like, so Terry was dope. Terry pulled all this stuff that was like, it could be Western, but it ain't. And I remember trying them on and we settled on this, like that double denim. It just worked. We're looking at it. We're like, is this crazy? Is he wearing all blue? Like, he's got the shirt on and he's got this, he's got that, and then he's got the holsters. And then Terry also found these cowboy boots. Because I was like, can I hide cowboy boots but not look like the front? So you don't know he's wearing... It looks like he could just be wearing Tim's or something.
Yeah,
boots, right, yeah.
But actually, you know, it's work up front. But if you roll the jeans up, it's party time. And he found that, so I'm wearing these, like, it's the funny, and no one knew, right? No one knew that I was wearing cowboy boots because you couldn't tell, but the silhouette of my calf is a cowboy boot.
Yeah.
And we only found out because one of the changes to the script, which happened on the day, was when Sheriff Hassan pulls out his gun and reveals that he does have his gun and he brought it into church.
Yeah.
In the script, it says he pulls it out from his leg holster.
Yeah, yeah.
And because COVID and da, 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 I never actually told Mike I was wearing cowboy boots. He never really got in on me because no one would know, right? And we're on set and we have props with us and the guns are coming and we're doing it and it's full of people. And I'm like, oh, Mike, can I show you something for a minute? And he was like, what's up? I went, we can't do that. They're asking about the leg holster. It's like, what's the problem? And I went, I'm wearing these. And it was the last week of shooting. So I'd gone 6 months and I rolled up the jeans and this frilly cowboy pattern. And Mike just starts pissing himself laughing. He's like, we can't show that. Everyone will laugh when he rolls it up to like save his son. So he was like, let's just do the waistband. Just pull out the waistband.
Yeah.
And so we'll never reveal. So he didn't know until that moment that I've been rocking. He has a pair of them at his house now.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So that was me. That was 100% me. Was just, yeah, like, I wanted to create that silhouette of Sheriff Hassan. So, like, anytime there was a doorway, I leaned in it a certain way. I sat back in a chair a certain way. I was doing a lot of, like, resting on one hip and watching Clint Eastwood and where and how they proportion their weight, because I wanted him to feel like you don't question who he is. He's a small town sheriff. He just comes in a package they're not used to.
Exactly.
So yeah, that was my Rahulism. That's what I definitely kind of couldn't wait to infuse, whether it was needed or not.
That's great, man.
So I never knew if I'd ever play a cowboy, right? So I was like, I'm gonna take my shot and make the sheriff.
Absolutely.
I love that. Thank you for sharing these stories. These are some fantastic stories. I love hearing about this.
I've rarely got to talk about it, so it's awesome to want to have an audience to talk to about.
Oh yeah, no, for sure, man. When we edit this and post this back up, man, I trust me, I think a lot of people are gonna love this. So I really, really thank you for doing this with us. And I know you don't have a lot of time, so I don't want to take up too much of your time, but how can we support you? What's next for you? What are you doing? Like, I want to know what.
Yeah, tell us.
I am.
We're fans.
Yeah. Like, literally, we will follow you to the end of the earth. Like, whatever you play. You want to be Mr. Fantastic in Marvel? We'll champion that. You want to go into Star Wars? We have Shermaine O'Boyd, Benochinoy's number. We can make that. We can try to do that. She was
Neves,
part of this
don't
Marvel.
Give that away.
I'm good. I got my Star Wars shot. I think everyone knows I wanted to be in Star Wars. That was my dream.
Okay.
It came before Midnight Mass, and they wanted me to shave, and I wouldn't shave because I didn't want the sheriff to have a fake beard because of the schedule. So I was like, nah. And I said yes to Midnight Mass first. So bye-bye Star Wars.
And then
I was fine. And I was like, you know what? I don't actually need to be in Star Wars. That's cooler than ever. And then what the character I did play was my own original thing with Mike. And No, I don't want to be in anything, man. I'm good. I'm so cool. I I have things happening right now. Obviously, I've had a very, very, very unlucky career at the same time as being very fortunate. I started iZombie 5 years, mm-hmm. and that was a great show, and people loved Ravi Chakrabarty. Mm-hmm. Again, representation, that was... People were really happy to see a South Asian not be played stereotypically, kind of just be the kind of funny dude and not use race as the butt of the jokes or culture difference. He was just like an energetic book. Anyway, so, and when I got out, I booked Blind Manor. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be an A-lister soon. This is crazy. What a trajectory. I've just finished this show and now I'm off to this. And as I'm doing Blind Manor, I book Midnight Mass with Mike again. And then COVID happens. And we can't do premieres, press, red carpet. Right. So that kills a lot of the self-promotion. I also got unlucky because when we were allowed to do it remotely, I wasn't allowed to because it fell on my filming days. So I'm absent of Midnight Mass press. If you look, I'm not doing Midnight. I only did one video with Alex Zane. I'm just not really around for that. So I didn't get to do Blind Manor because of Midnight Mass. I couldn't do Midnight Mass because of a Hulu show. And I couldn't do Usher because of the SAG strikes.
Oh, my God.
So
that's right. That happened last year.
I'm not like this, like, Joaquin Phoenix elusive dude who just doesn't show up for press. And I didn't do press for the Hulu show because I had personal reasons. But, like... I'm down to like be the guy and talk about these projects and talk about the people I worked with and give credit where it's due. But I've just been mad unlucky. So, so wow. Like, and now that the SAG strikes are over, but we're facing maybe the IATSE strike, everything's up in the air, man. So like, I'm just grinding. I'm doing my own thing. I'm working on some projects I can't talk about.
Of course.
And but I did do a little. I was a small part of Mike's new film, The Life of Chuck, which is fantastic. I had the privilege of seeing it a while back, and it's one of Mike's beautiful films. I can't really say too much more, but yeah, I'm back on the grind, man. I'm auditioning like I haven't been a series regular on some of the bigger shows on Netflix.
Right.
I'm auditioning like I just started my career, like a plucky teenager. I'm auditioning for the big stuff, and then they cast the A-lister anyway, so they were never even interested in your audition. That keeps happening now. Mm. It's all fun. But I'm happy, man. I'm content. I love the work that I've done. A couple of ones I don't talk about because they suck. But you don't have to support them. If I ain't Instagramming about them, you know I don't like them.
Yeah.
aside from that, yeah, I'm just content.
Listen, I hear your name thrown out all the time when people fan cast stuff. So, like, are talking about you. People are definitely talking about you, even though if the studios and people can't see it, like, your fan base is strong. And they're always like, every time I talk about this movie, they're like, you know who would be really good? Rahul Kohli. It's like you're the guy. You are the guy. Like, people want to see you and stuff because we see us in you.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah. No, I do see the fan castings, and it's, look, on good days, they're wonderful when your mental health is good and you see people fan cast you and they're like, oh my God, you should be whoever.
Right.
You know, the one I until Pedro Pascal was announced.
Yeah, Mr. Fantastic, you'd be perfect. Mr.
Fantastic, yeah.
Everyone thought that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but, it didn't, yeah, anyway, what can I nearly said something I shouldn't there.
nope. No one heard anything.
I didn't hear a thing. I didn't hear anything.
I didn't get it, is the point. And but on good days, like I see the Constantine ones all flare up again. Everyone, you know, there's this like
John Constantine,
Constantine and stuff. And mm-hmm. I love all of them. And like I said, on good days, you're like, man, you're wanted, and people really want to see, you know, that's how cool is that, that you're the guy that people, as you know, will shout out for like anything. And on bad days, it's a reminder that you're just not the guy and you're not there, and these are the roles that you will never get. So it's sweet. It's again, it's all perspective. It's how you feel about yourself, yeah. Right? So
well, we will always champion you because we love you and we're big fans. But also, like, these characters, they've been played by people before. A character like Sheriff Hassan will never come around again, right? So it's something that no one can take away from you. So you'll always have that no matter what.
I appreciate
it. All I'm hearing is I open up a movie studio one day and we do our own thing and screw everybody else, okay? That's all I'm hearing.
Let me know. Yeah, for sure.
Listen, like, we're starting, like, I don't want to, you know, talk like we're a big deal. We only have like 10,000 followers, but like, we've been meeting a lot of people recently when doing press and stuff like that. And just because the brown community is so small, and I am definitely one of those guys that always throws your name in a room whenever. Oh, thank you, man. So I hopefully one of
these days. You know what's funny about that? You know, see, now you're getting the real me. I don't know how the community feels about me, to be honest, because, like, I go on Instagram and like, there'll always be, like, this South Asian dinner function celebratory awards, and I've never invited. And I'm like...
What?
Yeah. I've declined one or two, but, like, whenever I'll go on and I'll be like, I'll see other actors that are South Asian, and they're all having dinners in LA at an awards ceremony or something. I'm like, what? All right, cool.
Yeah.
And I'm such an unstable person that I'm like, oh, all right, cool. Then if it's, you know, I don't want to swear because you haven't, but if it's F.
No, you can now.
I can? Is it good?
Oh, right, yeah.
Cool. Go nuts. Yeah.
That's how I feel. So I'm like, oh, fuck me. You don't want to invite me? Then go fuck yourselves. I'm good. So like, I never know where I sit with that stuff. I like.
As someone who has been invited to a few of those, I'll tell you that is pretty political, and it's kind of like, what can you do for me? How many followers you have? What can you tweet? It's kind of like that.
I don't want to do anything for anyone. I'm good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how they get me to go. And I'm happy to do it because I do feel like I'm helping the culture and stuff like that. But, you know, there are people who should definitely probably not be invited.
Do you know how I want to help the community? By not doing it. I've got such controversial stuff. This is why, you know, I know you mentioned in the intro, like, you're like, I said I don't do interviews and I almost certainly never want to talk about diversity. I now, my publicist, we have an agreement. Like, if you were to do an official interview or press with me, you're not allowed to ask me about diversity.
Yeah,
it's like crazy.
It's like a crutch
insane,
now,
right?
These days.
Well, I don't want... I'm an actor, right? And I'm not... Look, Hamish Linklater is one of the best actors to work with. He absolutely steals the show of Midnight Mass. Cool. But I'm supposed to be on set. And I'm just as professional, and I deserve to be there just as much as Hamish does. And it ain't to do with diversity, right? We're actors, and we're all the same. But when Hamish would get an interview, he will talk about the character. But when I do an interview, if all I'm asked about is diversity and representation, I look like a diversity hire. Don't make me feel good.
That's a great point.
I don't want the audience to feel like all I... And then the thing is, if all you're asked is about representation and diversity... then it sounds like that's all you talk about. And it's not. You're film fans. We're movie fans. Yes. Oh, my God, dude. It means the world to me when a younger version of us comes up to me and they're like, oh, House of Usher. Oh, this video game. I wanted to see that. Sure, I did. It would have been so... When I was coming up, man, we had Naveen Andrews, maybe?
Yeah.
Art Malik. There was a couple, but, like, there wasn't the guy, right?
No.
And I'm not saying I'm the guy, but, like, right now you can look at Riz Ahmed and Dev Patel and Evan Jogia. There's so much representation for us right now. Raymond the Black and myself and Hamish Patel. Like, you're spoiled a little bit, even though it's not equal.
Yeah,
there are guys and they're doing stuff. Go see, you know, Monkey Man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I just came from Monkey Man. Amazing.
Do you know what I mean? You weren't gonna see that back in the day. But I don't wanna, yeah, like, I'm not, I don't wanna talk about
you
it.
You wanna go beyond that.
Yeah, and like, for me, like, with Mike, I think only Usher Only mass was my race relevant to why I booked the role.
Mm.
In Blind Manor, didn't matter where I was Indian.
Yeah, didn't
matter. Wasn't relevant to the story, and we never played it. In Usher, never played it. No one cared. Didn't matter. Midnight Club, I was playing the older version of story, in short, but neither of us were playing our race. And the future stuff with Mike is the same. And like, to me, for diversity, like I said, I love it when younger versions of us are like, oh my God, it means the world to see that. And it means the world to me too. But I ain't trying to do that. I'm not trying to talk about it. I'm trying to make dope stuff.
Mm.
And then later, just let people see that. And for me, the best version of representation for me is the one you didn't see. It's the one you didn't know was happening. It's the one where you're like, that movie's dope, he's cool. And it's not just people who look like me or identify with me like it. It's when other people from other cultures are like, that character's dope.
Yeah.
That's what I want for representation. I don't want to make stuff just for a niche market of people who look like me to make them feel like they have a shot one day. I want to make stuff where white people want to be the sheriff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where they're like, that character's dope. And at no point, like, that to me is what I'm trying to get to. And the only way I can do that is to shut my mouth, not be on red carpets going, yeah, well, you know, we know what we need. And I'm in there right now trying to do it in that space. And I'm trying to, so I try and keep out of those conversations. I don't want too many sound bites of me or tweets. That's why I deleted Twitter of stuff. Because honestly, I in a weird, messed up way, I want everyone to watch Midnight Mass, not niche audiences.
Right.
Because who cares if the people that already agree with us and see the world like we do?
Yeah,
I agree. Right? If they watch Mass, great. Then they say, yes, it is the best representation. Dope. All right, cool. But if I've already ran my mouth off and turned people off to even watching it, they'll never see the message. They'll never see that classroom scene because they're already turned off to me.
Yeah. So true. That's so true. Because
I want the Bev Keens to see the classroom scene. It's great that you guys love it, and I love it, and my boys love it. But we, you know, that's you change
the world hasn't changed.
Seeing that, right? And they go, "What? That's the or so." And it doesn't. I'm not trying to say I'm trying to pander to the right or anything. I'm not saying something crazy like that. I'm just saying that if I shut my mouth and I stay off the diversity train, and we just quietly go in, and you know, we have this big project coming up. It'll be announced soon. Massive. I've already said to the people, I'm not doing, don't ask me damn question about diversity. I don't want a soundbite about it. I just want everyone to just be like, oh, dope.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm going to do whenever it comes out. To be like, oh, dope.
Yeah, no, that's
leave
true.
Leave it as that. Oh, that's dope. True.
No.
Yeah.
I totally agree. That's why I love talking about the characters and not so much about the diversity, because that's just all in the background. That just happened, right?
Yeah.
And the characters are what's important. And to bring that kind of level of acting and writing to a character is what matters, not that they're a certain color. So I completely agree with you. And I feel like a lot of times these movies, a lot of them shoot themselves in the foot by promoting so much diversity, because then it turns off a lot of people and they're like, oh, it's woke. When really the show is not woke.
It's not woke.
They just promoted it that way and it just turned off a lot of people who probably would have enjoyed it.
And it's a dumb thing we do, because a lot of the people that make the decisions about what they want to run with on the media campaign are white.
Yeah.
And
surprise.
But it's like patting themselves on the back and then but shooting themselves in the foot at the same time, because it's like, no, just yes, we have race Benson characters.
Yeah.
And it's dope. And there are some things you're going to see that we haven't done in diverse representation before. But shush, just let it go out and don't sit there and let and actors, obviously, you know, it takes a lot of time, man. I fell into traps, man. Like when I first had a bit of a following, you fall into this crazy trap, man. And I wish I could go back and change it, but I can't. Where you feel when you're someone who is just a regular dude living their life, And then, you know, you have a couple of hundred followers on Instagram and Twitter, and all of a sudden, you know, now you have 1,000. Don't forget what that felt like. 1,000. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd see normal people have 1,000 and be like, what? Imagine that then changes to 20, 30, 40, 50.
Yeah.
You start hearing about the weight. You start this thing, and it's this weird pressure of your responsibility, your voice. Oh, I have a platform. Everyone keeps telling me that my platform's important. It's almost like you now have a resource, and it's very easy to watch your peers and succumb to an audience and think, well, I must use my platform. And if it's not inherently you, or you know, and you're, at first you may only stick to topics that are that pertain to you, that you are passionate about. Not before long, you start commenting on other things that you're not 100% sure about, but you're succumbing to the pressure of, well, I spoke about this, so I have to speak about that. Before you know it, you're virtue signaling. You're saying things you're not really sure about. Mm-hmm. And all the actors, you know, actors in general, that's why they're so contradictory, because they're like, oh, I'm boycotting this, and then they're not, because they don't really know what the fuck they don't. It's because it's this weird pressure, and I wish I knew when I was younger just to like just be myself. There is only a few issues I really care about. I have always cared about, and if I am going to talk about it, I'll talk about those. But I'm not going to bring up everything. And then you're not going to come to me. I don't have a comment to make on every little detail, facet of social economic stuff, because I'm not educated. I went to drama school. I didn't even go to university. I just learned how to do acting a bit. Like, you know, since I was a kid, Palestine. It's the only thing I was brought up educated about. And, you know... Again, bringing it back to my boy, I can't have Muslim brothers and not know about what's happening in Gaza. And we're not talking about what happened recently. We're talking about history. Like
decades.
We're talking about 70 years. Yeah, decades. You know, and in England, I'm not sure why media, but like we as Brits were also very aware. We have a very different view of it as opposed to how things are in America and what information is fed there. That would be one of the only things I would have been like, well, no, actually, this has been for me 20 plus years of being pro-Palestine and being against genocide and being against the displacement of the people. But anyway, I fell into the same trap as everyone else, which is like I diluted my voice by constantly thinking I had to comment on every little thing. And now I've gotten to a point, I'm 38 years old, and if I do press and red carpets, I have the strength and confidence to be like, I want to talk about it. Cool.
Yeah.
Good. No, that's awesome. Because like, I hate when people lie when they don't know things, they have an opinion, then they just make things worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
By you saying like, I don't know about this, or I don't know enough, I don't want to talk about it. That's amazing. That is intellectually honest. Like, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Listen.
I prefer that.
I know you have to go, but this has been the best interview I've done. This has been a dream interview. I've had so much fun talking to you. I appreciate you talking about Palestine. I appreciate you talking about the characters and the acting and all the people that help you make this character what it is. I don't know what else to say, man. I'm just like, this has been my
starstruck, right?
This is my Mount Rushmore of interviews, because there will never be another, like, because you were the first. You were the first time we got to see ourselves, and there will never be another first for us. So I hope you wear that like a badge of honor, because that's really what it is.
I never saw it like that, but it means the world to me. And thank you for the support on social media, man, the TikToks, the clips I get to share. So, you know, no one talks about this show really. And somehow you put up that classroom scene and it goes viral on TikTok. And it reminds me on my low times, I'm like, even if you never work again, you have something special came from one of the projects you were on. And you're a reminder of that. And the way you feel about that. And it's like gasoline to me, man. It fuels me up to go, all right, I'll submit the next audition and I'll keep moving on. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We appreciate it.
Can't wait to see all your future projects. I'm hyped.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us in the chat. Thank you, everybody. We'll be posting this episode up soon. And until next time, guys, Salam, nerds.